views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Well, welcome to Voices of Women. So glad for everybody joining us today. We're going to have an amazing conversation with Max Dashu. She's the founder of the Suppressed Histories Archives. She started that in 1970 to research women's history and heritages globally. She has an amazing collection of historic images that, and so she has created hundreds of slideshows, which she uses to teach about the female realities hidden from view. And so there's just a wealth of information that she has in her books, in her slideshows. She has a Suppressed Histories page, Facebook page. It has 148,000 people following her, and her articles remain in the top 1% of views on academia.edu. She has a new book out called Witches and Pagans. It's the first to be published from the series Secret Histories of the Witches, and you can find out about all these on her website is www.suppressedhistories.net. And in this book, it's a compelling exploration of language, archaeology, medieval literature, and art. And Max really pulls the covers off of heritages known to few but scholarly specialists. So there's, if this is of interest to people, I know it's a great book to have to really dive deeply into this subject of witches and pagans. So welcome, Max.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. Well, congrats. I know this has been a project of many, many, many years.
Oh yeah, decades in fact.
Decades. So congrats on getting this done, and it's a series, and there's more books to come. But first, what inspired you to be a scholar and study witches and pagans?
Well, I began by looking for free women in history, and looking around the planet and seeing where women were not subjected to patriarchy. And that was my starting point. And I was looking for matriarchal societies. And the more that I delved, women's spirituality became evident that this was like a major, major sphere of power for women. Even in some patriarchal societies, that survived. And so as time went on, I was tracking a lot of different things that affect women's history. So, we have to look at all the axes of oppression. And so, empire and slavery and all of that. And I became interested in what happened in Europe. How did Europe get transformed to become, a world conqueror? So that was part of the picture. But more so from the standpoint of the spiritual perspective, I wanted to look at female spheres of power inside Europe and how those were done away. And the pagan tradition, as many people recognize, preserved a lot of those. And of course, witches have been so demonized. And I even grew up reading historical novels about witch hunts, it was referred to at least. And so I was always curious about that, but I really wanted to peel away all the layers of Christianization to see what were those original ethnic cultures like. What were the traditions? What did women have that we don't have now?
Mm-hmm. And so what did you find?
Well,
that's a big question.
Lots of things. One of the chapters in the book that I've just published, Witches and Pagans, and the subtitle is Women in European Folk Religion, is called, one of the chapters is called Names of the Witch. And what I do there is I show that if you look at the linguistics, the names for witches in the folk cultures, you know, we're talking about Germanic and Romance languages and Finnic and all kinds of different language families in Europe, are not about harm doers or devil worshippers. They signify knower, seeress, prophetic woman, diviner, healer, herbalist, herb chanter, shapeshifter. And so those designate spiritual powers. They're something very positive. They were acknowledged and recognized, these women, by their societies as having a certain kind of power and wisdom. And so, you know, it's that wisdom that we're trying to get at underneath all the layers. And a lot of times, because, you know, we're talking about unwritten traditions, and so pieces survive in oral tradition of the common people in all the different countries of Europe. But we also have some very interesting written sources by the enemies, those who are trying to stamp out these cultures. You know, there was a whole cultural war, kind of like the Cultural Revolution, only long, that happened in Europe after the fall of Rome, where you have kings decreeing Christianity as the state religion and outlawing all others. But you've got this huge web of culture that was everything from festivals and names for constellations and place names that are, you know, designating goddesses or ancestors or fairies. You've got proverbs, and just the whole web of language was still saturated with heathenism. And so that took many, many centuries to get rid of. And one of the ways they tried to get rid of it, they actually left evidence of the traditions themselves in their attempt to stamp them out. So you have bishops and priests writing penitential books and saying, is there any woman who... And then they would list the custom, making offering to the fates or singing incantations over their weaving, whatever the pagan practice was. And they would go around to towns and villages because they have the confession, right? So they're interrogating people, and they're looking for those who are leading in these traditions, and then they are repressing them. They're not burning them at the stake, not at this period. The state is already beginning to burn at the stake, but it's not as widespread as it became later. But there's an ecclesiastical repression that was a culture war, basically, against the common woman.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, to where you found the history, you know, like you said, from the enemy. It's sort of a weird term to think of the enemy, but they were the ones suppressing the...
Well, say the opponents.
The opponents, you know, yes.
who desired to destroy all of this because they believed that it was devil worship. And this is where this concept comes from.
Yeah.
From the priesthood.
And where do you think that, I mean, that just sounds really like fear, you know, fear of that power, fear of that.
Definitely fear. And also, you know, ideological frameworks that refuse to recognize the validity of any other spiritual tradition than their own. This was an authoritarian model that they inherited from Imperial Rome. Because, as you probably know, early Christianity, you have all kinds of women sects, you know, the Coleridians, and many traditions that had female priestesses, like the Montanists, which were named after a man, but the actual prophets in that tradition were primarily female in Asia Minor. You know, you do have that going on, but that gets stamped out by the might of the Roman state. And so gradually you've got this very, very misogynist superstructure inside the institutional church that bars women from priesthood, that bars the concept of goddess. They were really forced to smuggle in the goddess. I like to say the Catholic Church swallowed the goddess because the demand from the below was too strong. They wanted the female divine. You know, they demanded it. They had to have it. And so this is how we get Mary and the Black Madonnas and all of the female saints coming in and very often cloaking older forms of culture that were, in fact, pagan goddesses.
Yeah, and wasn't that cloaking, wasn't that to convert them to Christianity? They could superimpose their holidays over the pagan holidays.
Yeah. And then it, I mean, for the priesthood standpoint, it was a bait and switch. You know, let's just get them. And there were, we have specific letters from Pope Gregory to the English missionaries saying, yeah, take their shrines and, you know, turn them into churches. And, you know, actually, this was a conscious strategy. But from the standpoint of the common people, they're concerned because they had, their rulers were forcing this down their throats. And so their concern was to preserve their customs and their faith and to basically smuggle it in, you know, and they did that pretty successfully for a long time. Now, the period that I'm talking about in this book is 700 to 1100, and this is the break point because at the beginning of that time, you've basically got a pagan population. You know, you've got patches of Christianity in the cities and, you know, you have, you know, Ireland converts fairly early, but again, this is not absolute. By the end of that period, you're seeing, you know, we're getting into the high Middle Ages, and the church apparatus is becoming much more sophisticated in the way that they shift everything. And so much more now, people are not so much talking about goddesses, although I document in the book how they are still talking about goddess. But they're beginning to shift at the end of that period to forms that are acceptable in the Christian framework. Because mm-hmm. it was just not viable any other way.
Right. And so it kind of went underground, so to speak.
Well, it did go underground. And it's just like, you know, what's really interesting is that, you know, the degree to which this was preserved through all of this repression. There are pockets of, you know, Cornwall or, you know, Sicily or just different regions of Europe, particularly Eastern Europe, kept a larger amount of it because they did not have the same degree of repression as they did in the mm-hmm. Catholic way.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're just going to need to go on a break right now, so we're going to come back and talk more with Max Dashew and find out more about witches and pagans.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience launching in April. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
The doctor is in. Tune in to the hit show, The Psychic Love Doctor, with host Deborah Lee. Deborah's life-affirming, highly perceptive reading method has taught Deborah how to zero in on specific problems with relationships, career pursuits, and current roadblocks to success and happiness. Join Deborah Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific and for a special broadcast the second Thursday of every month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedemann Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and we're speaking with Max Dashew about her new book, Witches and Pagans. So, Max, we were just, you know, sharing a lot about this, the history of all this and the era, you know, like 700 to 1100. One of the main things that you start off your book about is the word weird, and you talk about the three weird sisters. Yes. So I'd love for you to share about those.
Yes. Well, you know, weird, and this is the old word is spelled a little bit differently. It's W-Y-R-D in Anglo-Saxon. Weird meant destiny originally, and that's where our word weird that we use now comes from. So it kind of shifted over to mean eerie, right? But it was from a verb of being that is shared by all the Indo-European languages. And so we have weird in English, and we have urd in the Norse. Same name. The Germans had it, and you have it scattered around different places. And so it's basically the sum of all being. It's a past tense of the verb of being. And so there's a sense that this also destines that which is what, you know, which is to come. And this term remained active in medieval Old English for a long time. It was so deep in the culture. But I found a whole group of proverbs that are known as the Cotton Maxims. And you find a few of these proverbs in other old English literature. And one of them says, Christ is great, weird is mightiest. And so they're actually putting the Christian God side by side with weird as a deity. And, you know, so that's really dramatic. But weird is very much perceived as a spinner and a weaver. And in fact, the name weird is also related to Sanskrit and German names, Welsh names, Slavonic names for the spindle. And the spindle turns. The ultimate root of this name for being is turning, revolving. So it's really a philosophical basis. This whole thing unfolds into a heathen philosophy of time, of being, of the way our lives unfold. And very often the way that's expressed is that weird is a weaver. And so there are all these weaving words that connect with the concept of fate in not just in Old English, but in Lithuanian and Norse and other languages. And so they say in Beowulf, weird goes as she shall. And the word drew near. And there's this concept of weird appearing, a female being appearing at momentous times in someone's life. And one of the most important of the proverbs is, may that weird gewef, what weird wove for me. And they had, you know, I look into the linguistics a lot because this is what remains to us, is seeing what the priestly scribes recorded, and sometimes in describing Christian things, they would resort to pagan concepts because that's what everybody understood. That was the culture. And so they talk about the weaving of weird or the weird staff, maybe a weaver's sword, as a name for what fate ordains.
And this is fascinating. And, you know, and it relates
isn't
to
amazing?
Yeah, and Macbeth, too, the fates that there's the witches that. The three witches and Macbeth. Is it Macbeth?
Right.
Or?
So that's a little bit later. You come into before Shakespeare, actually, in the 1300s and in the 1500s, you have other chroniclers and writers in England who are talking about three weird sisters, and she becomes triune as she was already. The fates are triune in most of the European cultures. So you've got the threefold goddess, whether it's Norns in Scandinavia, Sudinice, which means the judges in the Slavic languages, and, you know, the Fatas become spade in French and fairy in English. So there's a fate connection of those threefold, just like the fairy, three fairy grandmothers in the fairy tales. You know, all of this is of a piece. They're all connected. And we can find folkloric strands, we can find linguistic strands, and there's all these deep connections, basically going down to the idea of divine mothers, triune, who are spinners and weavers, and what they spin and weave is our lives and the whole course of the world, or even the cosmos.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, and I know one of these aspects in your book, too, is about the... I mean, you think of pagan religions now that it's earth-based. And so some of this, too, is relating to how they did offerings to the trees and the and nature.
Yes. Yes. And the penitential books that I was talking about before, the priesthood inveighs against people's animist practices, their reverence for water and tree and stone. And so I document that in depth, as well as their denunciations of healers and diviners, right? But there's one piece that's really fascinating that is, it starts out as a French penitential book around 800, the year 800, and written by Halitgar of Cambrai. And so a couple hundred years later, an English translator renders this into Anglo-Saxon. And so he quotes, this is the part where, first I'll read you the French, the Latin version from France. Some men are so blind that they bring their offerings to earth-fast stone and also to trees and to wellsprings and will not understand how stupidly they act, blah, blah, blah. But the Anglo-Saxon translator contextualizes this for us and he adds a revealing phrase, swa wiccan tacheth, as the witches teach. Bring their offerings to earth-fast stone, to trees and to fountains, as the witches teach. And this is one of the most important things I found in the whole book, because right there you have a demonstration. This is only 1,000 years ago, that the spirituality of the witches was not about harming people. It was not devil worship. It was something very similar to what indigenous people do all over the world, you know. And so you have an ancestral European tradition where it's, we're basically authenticating, yes, we did those things. We also had ancestor worship, the hand drum sweat houses. You know, all of those things were present. And so that connects Europe with the rest of the world. And this is very important to know, because what came between that time, 1,000 years ago, and where we are now was a whole authoritarian ideology of, you know, it can only be one way, only this one belief, men are in charge, white men are in charge, you know, to decree what everybody must do and how they must believe. And so this later on goes out, and when Europe conquers the rest of the world, this becomes an ideology of conquest. And all of those indigenous religions are called now devil worship by these conquerors. And so what happened internally in Europe is then turned around later in the code of domination against the rest of the planet.
Yes, and we know the history of that. Yeah. So, and then the other aspect, there's a lot of focus on the Scandinavian culture. There are ceremonies, and I love there's this phrase, sitting out on the land for wisdom.
I know. That's another really good one. I'm glad you... that struck you as well. I'm going to find the link here so I can... basically, utiseta is a term that is Norse. It means literally sitting out. And you can actually see the words, utiseta, right? And it means sitting out on the land as a dreamer, to chant or to sit in silence. And they might be out there for days, or they might sit out overnight on a rock or in a forest, or overlooking, you know, a river valley, whatever, in these places of natural wisdom and power. And so what's interesting is that this is something that several of my sources are saying, this is seen as primarily a female thing. And men did sit out on burial mounds, so you have testimony to that, which I talk about. But The Utiseta is something that's connected with the Norse seeress, who's known in Scandinavian language, Old Norse, as Vulva, and the plural of that would be Vuller. And those names mean staff woman. And so you have the shamanic staff coming into view, which is also the witch's wand that we know very well from fairy tales. And you have the shamanic staff, again, all over the planet. So they're named after their ceremonial staves. They go out, and basically they're vision questing on the land. They do ceremonies that are known as sather, and they're basically trance ceremonies that the seeress enters a deep state of spiritual union by means of incantations. And sometimes they're described going around from settlement to settlement with a chorus of 15 girls and 15 boys who sing these seid lati, these seid songs, to bring her into a spiritual ecstasy. And then she begins to prophesy. And as late as 1,000 years ago, the Norse still believed in this. People who were really living on the edge in terms of climactically, like the Norse settlers in Greenland, very difficult. They tried to farm and herd there, but it was not the right climate for it. And so they were really at the edge. And one of the last descriptions and one of the longest descriptions of a vulva doing these prophetic ceremonies comes from Greenland in the 1300s. And they describe her with her seid staff and how it's inlaid with gems and her clothing, which has, she has catskin gloves and she has all this regalia with her and a medicine bag hanging from her belt. And so they receive her with great honor and they lead her to the high seat. And basically what they want to know is, what is the coming season going to bring us here? Because we're on the verge of starvation with the weather in this place. And so she does not prophesy immediately. She has to sleep on it. So there's a dreaming aspect that comes into it. And they give her a meal that night before she goes to bed that has the heart of everything living on the land. And so she consumes the essence of the land. The next morning, they have a ceremony, and she looks around, and she needs to save Lati. But this date is very late, almost to 1400. And Christianization has been going on, you know, forcible Christianization has been going on for three centuries by that time. And yet in Greenland, which is the outlying margins of Europe, it's still alive.
That's because she looks around. We're going to have to come back and hear what happens when she looks around. Yeah. This is Chris Stanis. You're listening to Voices Woman. We'll be right back.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Are you feeling stagnant or blocked in your love life, career, health, or finances? Experiencing difficulty focusing or setting and achieving goals? Tune in to Spiritual Diagnostics Radio with psychic visionary healers Carol Dorian and Suzanne Evans. Discover the cause and effect of unwanted patterns in life. Tune in every Tuesday, 12 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. And for more information, visit spirituald.com.
Are you anxious, worried, or insecure? Hi, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub. I'm the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Join me for my next breakthrough video seminar, which starts on September 10th. This program has helped thousands of people worldwide to overcome their struggles with anxiety, and I'm certain it can also help you. If you're ready to be free again and have a stronger foundation of inner peace and confidence, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com.
Have you ever tried to make lifestyle changes but had difficulty following through? Imagine what it would be like to get up each morning with energy, clarity, and motivation to tackle the day. If you want to get past limiting barriers that are preventing you from living your best life, join holistic health and wellness coach T. Carrie Mitchell each month on The Dr. Pat Show, or visit lifestyle120.com today and start to receive the personal attention you deserve.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and we've been talking with Max Dashu, and she was just telling a story of Thor Bjorg was in Greenland, and she was dreaming to tell, foretell the future of how life was going to be here in this village. And so you were just leaving off, like, what did she do in the morning then after she had her dreams?
Right. So she asks around, she says, well, you know, I need someone to sing the Seidlati, the incantations for trance. And because Christianization had made such deep inroads in the culture, there didn't seem to be anybody, any woman who knew the songs. Finally, this Christian woman spoke up and says, well, I know the songs. They were taught to me by my godmother. But, you know, I don't mean to have any part of this because I am a Christian woman. And so Thorbjörg says, well, you know, I'll just leave it to the community what should be done here. And the upshot is that the woman sings the Seidlati and she does the ceremony. And she treats the woman very kindly and thanks her and predicts great things for her in her future and the outcome. But basically she says, well, the season will improve and everybody's very relieved. And, you know, they're always giving gifts to these women and that's how they make their livelihood. So she's a traveling prophetess. And that's a little window into how it was, you know, in that older time.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by that. Just getting that picture of that, of it being a woman, because you always sort of hear, well, later on, I think, of the traveling men who, you know, the storyteller that would go from village to village, or you hear of, you know, the stories, the myths of Merlin and all that kind of, those kinds
right.
of things. And to get, you know, so it's just like, that's in the beginning, this hidden, the hidden reality of what women did is important to reclaim.
You have to just dig under, and, you know, there's little fragments of it all over the place, you know, but it's, you have to dig for it.
Well, thank you for doing the digging.
It's not something most historians want to talk about, and yeah. The problem is that a lot of this is only available in really specialized literature. So my idea is this is a source book to bring all this rich loads of culture. You know, these are the strands of ripped webs of culture that we want to know about. And so to bring it into focus and bring it into the fingertips of readers now who don't want to plow through all those old Latin text or whatever, wherever it's sequestrated.
Mm-hmm. And so another thing, and I think you've spoke of this even with Thorbjörg, is this spinning and weaving. And that feels very, you know, that's such a woman's industry. I've been a weaver. I love doing that kind of thing with my hands. And it was so prominent. And I think you mentioned it as like, as they were spinning and weaving, they would chant into the cloth.
Yes. And we have numerous testimonies from bishops in Spain, France, Germany, talking about this practice of chanting, women chanting in their webs. And, you know, one guy in Belgium, one bishop, says no woman should hang amber amulets from her neck, nor in weaving or dyeing or textile work, name Minerva or other unpropitious persons. And see, what he means by that, he's talking about other goddess names in the native language. because Minerva is a Roman goddess. And so the priesthood always tried to put things in Latin and use Roman because they thought that was authoritative, which has robbed us of a lot of actual names of the goddesses. And, you know, so there are these descriptions of this and women hanging amulets in Spain 1,000 years ago from their loom in the form of little animals. And sermons saying that wretched women refused to weave or spin on Thursdays, which was supposed to be a pagan day of rest. And stories about Brigidess, the first weaver in Ireland. And it was she who put the white threads in the loom that have a healing power to this day. And so one of the things that happens, they weave the cloth, and then, of course, the women are also making clothing. Very often, you see them in different places described as chanting over the cloth or over the clothing in order to protect the wearer, you know. And that's something we find in Northern Europe, especially in Ireland and in Scandinavia. And there's numerous references to that in the Norse epics that, you know, this was something, you know, they believed in their shamanic chants, that it would imbue the garment with an energetic field that would protect them, similar in some ways to the ghost dance shirts, if you want to make a very far comparison. So, and then, of course, the act of spinning and weaving also leads back to the symbol of goddesses and especially the fates. You know, so this is all, and even funerary customs using carding combs. The women would clap carding combs together over the person who had died before they were carried out for burial. You know, this symbolism just recurs over and over. And I should not omit, there's a very important chapter on the Völler, the Norse seeresses. I discovered some pictures of the staves of these seeresses. They've been found in archaeological sites all over Scandinavia, and a few even in Ireland and Russia, where the Norse got over to. And I could not figure out, they have a funny shape. There's this staff that kind of curves out spokes and then comes back together to the top of the staff. And I was like beating my head over, what is that? It is something. What does it mean? Well, it turns out this Norse scholar, I think he's a Norwegian scholar, Eldar Heda, figured it out. He said, these are distaffs. And I started Googling distaffs immediately, and they are exactly the shape of a distaff.
And what's a distaff?
If you don't know what that is, it's when you spin, you have one staff where you wrap the flax or the wool onto it, and then you draw the fibers, the unspun fibers, off, and then you draw them off into a drop spindle, which twists them as it turns. So it's a weaving tool, a spinning tool, rather. And so this spinning tool symbolized the fates. It symbolized women's creative power. You know, all these really rich metaphors are going on. And so that was the ceremonial staff used by, as far as we can see, most of the Norse Völler, is they were moving the staff in the ceremony. And, you know, maybe they were pointing with it or drawing down power with it. I mean, you could compare with shamanic rites in other parts of the world to think about how it might have been used. Or they might have even, some of them have little jingles dangling off them, so they could have been shaken as a percussion instrument. You know, lots of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. So used in ceremony.
Yeah. Because, you know, some Norse scholars, pagan scholars on Norse studies, have been saying, well, you know, the Norns aren't shown spinning and weaving. And it's true that that's not a primary metaphor in the sagas. But now we have this idea of the distaff as a female staff of power, a symbol really of female authority that is, you know, really important connection to the rest of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other aspect of weavers is the Valkyrie, which is the Nordic tradition of the Valkyrie, weavers of battle. And peace weavers and peace sanctuaries. So it's, we have a couple of minutes before we go on break to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's some sagas that, I think it's Njal's sagas, has a section in it where the Valkyries arrive and they go into a woman's weaving shed and they begin weaving the outcome of battle, and they're doing it with the entrails and flesh of men. So this is a very grisly passage, but, you know, basically saying that these female divinities are causing you know, they're going to determine who falls and who lives, right? And there are similar references if you go over to Ireland with the bow. And the bow is a reference to the raven or the scald crow. And she is very much also a figure of destiny. So both in Irish and the Norse, you've got the raven of battle. And this goes all the way back to the ancient Gauls because there was a goddess named Cathu Bodua, which means battle raven. And the Irish had the same name, Bau Caha. Spelling looks more similar than the pronunciation. But, you know, there were these ideas because these were not matriarchal societies. I'm not trying to make that case for this time period. But so there was a lot of battle, and a lot of our written references come, of course, through men. You know, those scribes, virtually all men. And so male concerns around war take up a big space. And so a lot of the discourse there about the weaving of fate by these fateful beings, these goddesses, has to do with whether a man will die in battle or not. So it's skewed because we know very well that the Norns had to do with birth, of course, not just death, all the great events of life. And we know that Norse women, and even later on in Scandinavia, they continued to make the Nornagrautr, which is the Norn's porridge. And so on the occasion of birth, they would make this porridge, they would offer it to the Norns, and then they would feed the mother with it. So these are the kind of customs that hung on because women didn't want to give them up. They felt like their well-being was connected to being able to do this and making these offerings to the fateful sisters. And so they kept it on. And in some places, this was still going on in early modern times.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, I forget the name of it, but there's this amazing porridge that I have in Norway. and I'm blanking out on the name of it, but it was delicious. Well, we're back going on a break again. We'll come back and talk more with Max Dashu, and we'll be talking about women who go by night with the goddess.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you want for yourself. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show for women in recovery who are ready to live life on purpose. Tune in and let Catherine help you live your truth one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's LynnBrownEvent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Women, and we've been listening to Max Dashew, and her book is Witches and Pagans, her new book. Now, Max, how about giving your website where people can learn about you and the book and everything else?
Yes, the new Valletta Press website is where the book is available from. You won't find it in bookstores, and it's valletta.net. And so you can get excerpts there. You can pre-order. It's actually officially being released tomorrow. So we'll be shipping them out very soon. But the book outline and chapter excerpts and everything is on there.
And that's Valletta is, we should probably spell that for people, is
Belleda.net.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And then you also have your suppressedhistories.net too.
Yes, and suppressedhistories.net, there's more about me. I don't have a bio or anything on this. I'm still struggling with HTML. So having to make this new webpage. So suppressedhistories.net has a lot of other articles, and it does also have quite a few excerpts from other volumes in this series, Secret History of the Witches, of which this current volume is volume 7. But it's also the first to be published.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, I was thinking, oh, your blog, you have a Suppressed Histories Facebook page that you do a post every day. So that's.
Yeah, I do. And in relation to the topic of this book, if you look at the page, you don't have to go down too far. There's a series of 4 posts I did that are related to this theme of the distaff as a female staff of power. And it's talking about later periods, not the period of the book, but basically in medieval and early modern times, how the distaff was used in misogynist representations, that female power was dangerous and bad, and showing women beating men with distaffs and all of this. So I'm using that just to, in the book, I talk more about how the distaff represented female power. But there's this, in the witch hunt period, you see something very negative being made out of it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, you do touch on the witch burnings and the witch hunts, which we know to happened 1500s or longer. And you're saying it was actually much earlier that it got started.
It began earlier. I mean, you have the laws around burning at the stake that are already a legacy of Roman law. And there are scattered references. I have a chapter called Early Witch Burnings in the book that talks about this period from mostly from about 800 to 1100, because I cover more of the earlier stuff in the previous volume, which is not out yet. But just really looking at the sexual politics of witch persecution in this time frame, where you have, for example, in Spain, women had to go through an ordeal, that literally put them through an ordeal of walking on red hot iron. And if they had burn marks after 3 days, they were guilty and were burned at the stake. And this was a female punishment. Men who were accused did not have to go through this. So that's an example of the kind of thing that was going on, which is basically ignored by the great majority of academics that talk about this subject. And I think it's really important to know that there's a run-up to the period of the mass hunts, which really begin to take off at the end of the 1400s. The Inquisition has gotten involved, and, you know, torture trials are happening, and this really spreads the whole persecution like wildfire. And then it rages for several hundred years as a mass hunt phenomenon. But the earlier period is when the mythologies around the witch hunt are forged by the priesthood. And so you have, in chapter 7, it's called The Witch Holda and Her Retinue. I talk about how the priesthood described a folk belief in the women who go by night with the goddess Diana. And they call her Diana. Again, this is this Roman naming that they insist on. But at one point, a German bishop lets slip the real name of the folk goddess, and he calls her the Witch Holda. And this is related to a lot of names we know from German folk culture, Frau Holla and other goddesses who have to do with spinning and weaving, once again, and with the wild host that goes through the heavens during storms. And the company of the dead travel with them, and witches and spirits fly with them. And so this is what we see first being described around 906. And there's a German abbot who wrote one of these penitential books that I was talking about. And he says, certain criminal women who have turned back to Satan and blah, 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 believe that during the night they ride on certain beasts. That's a shamanic ride, right? Together with Diana, the goddess of the pagans, and an uncounted host of women, that they pass over many lands in the silence of the dead of night and obey her orders as a mistress. And on certain nights, they are summoned to her service. So this paragraph gets picked up by all kinds of other bishops and canon lawyers and gets propagated for the next couple hundred years. And it forms the basis of a mythology of the witches going with the goddess at first, but the priesthood turns it into with the devil. And this is one of the stories of all the witches flying off to the top of a sacred mountain where they dance and feast. And, you know, this is basically the old pagan festivals. But it's all being demonized in the witch hunt. You know, they're boiling babies and rubbing themselves with their fat and all these horrific stories that are invented that have much earlier roots, these stories, in late Roman time. And so what's really interesting is when we look down at the deepest layer, we're seeing ethnic beliefs in a goddess and women who travel with her in a shamanic way, riding on spirit animals.
Yeah, fascinating. And you know, getting the... It's interesting to get the stories behind the stories. You know, we sort of have these images of these, and you know, the whole thing of witches on brooms and, and all this. But what, you know, what was really happening back then, and how things were so turned around. You know, turning to devil worship and so not the truth of what it really was.
And there's some interesting stories, like, you know, pushing aside all that devil stuff, which is all, you know, made up by the priesthood. We have this one interesting pattern called the miracle of the bones. And in this, the witches have their feast. They take cattle, they slay them, they roast them, they eat them, and then they gather the bones up in the skins. And the goddess, and she's named different ways in Italy or in Estonia or various different places in the Alps, and she strikes the bones with her wand. And she says, basically the equivalent of, get up, bossy, and the cow rises up fully alive again. So there's a regeneration theme that is related to the story.
Well, fascinating. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Max. It was a wealth of information, and I encourage people to check out her book, Witches and Pagans.
Witches and Pagans, Women in European Folk Religion. Yeah.
Yes. And again, you can purchase the book at her website, www.veleda.net, VELEDA.net, and check out suppressedhistories.net as well. So I'm Chris Stainis. I'm founder of Woman of Wisdom Foundation. We are reimagining our 25th year for Woman of Wisdom Conference, February 16th to the 20th. If you would like to know more about it, sign up for our newsletter at womanofwisdom.org. If you would like to receive an invitation to present at the conference, contact us at wow@womanofwisdom.org and check out, there's information and application forms on the website, which right now is at www.thewowconference.org. Actually, very soon we'll be switching, all of it will be on womanofwisdom.org. But for today, it's on the wowconference.org. And just look for 2017 conference. So we're at the end of our show. I hope everybody has a fabulous weekend. And thanks again, Max.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today, radio with Chris Stainis.